Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, sorry for the interruption. My name is Alejandro.
And my name is Carlos.
We are not going to lie to you, we are not here selling candy for no school basketball team. In fact, I don't even go to school, and if you want me back in school today, I got candy for you.
You know those kids, right? You've seen them on your train and wondered about their lives. Well, that was a new movie whose protagonist is a 12-year-old on a mission to make money and keep his family, in this case he and his sister, together. Set among the car repair shops in Willets Point, Queens, the film is called Chop Shop. It's the second feature from director Ramin Barani, who also made the film Man Push Cart, and it's playing at Manhattan's Film Forum through Tuesday. Ramin Barani joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about Alejandro or Ali, the young man at the center of the film?
Yeah, Alejandro is a 12-year-old Latino boy. He's a street orphan, and he has just one sister, his family. She's 16 years old, and he's doing everything he can to keep them together. And he works and lives in a garage in Willets Point, Queens, which is on the outskirts of Queens, and it's 70 acres of junkyards and auto body repair shops and factories, and a point of contention for the city, I guess, at the moment.
Because there's a development controversy concerning that area that they call the Iron Triangle. Well, here's another clip of Ali and his sister, Izzy. This is just after he's tracked her down and is showing her their new place and talking about the job he's lined up for her in a food van.
Yo, you finally got some place, huh?
Yeah, and I got you a job, too.
Flora's mad cool. She cooks rice, beans, flautas, and, you know, everything else. And you don't gotta worry about it because you know how to do that stuff, too.
Ali, we're staying here.
No, straight upstairs. Come on. And you better not quit this job like you did the last job.
All right, the last job was whack and it was boring.
So what?
Now, that new home is a makeshift room inside one of the car repair shops of Willets Point, and you could hear the security gate behind which they will live. And you actually filmed there in the Iron Triangle?
Yeah, in fact, I spent about a year and a half there kind of learning about everything and meeting the people. And when we cast Alejandro to prepare for the role, he worked in Rob's garage. Rob is the owner of that garage in reality, and he also plays himself in the film. And Ale, at the age of 12, was spending his weekends and in the summertime learning to paint, prime, sand cars, and Rob would pay him for it. So.
And to be clear, this is not a documentary. This is a feature film, and those kids are actors.
Those kids are non-professionally trained actors. They don't really work there. They don't really live there. It is a fiction film, and people who think it's a documentary, I mean, we find it as filmmakers very flattering, but the kids worked really, really hard to make that film.
It's always slated for redevelopment over there. I don't think it's connected to the city sewer system, even that part of the Iron Triangle. This might be its last hurrah, do you think?
Who knows? I mean, there's one resident there named Joe. He's been there for about 70 years, and he's, I think, on the books, the only resident of Willets Point. And they don't want to fix the irrigation system now, but I guess if they build a hotel, someone's going to go fix it.
So this film and your last one about a Pakistani pushcart vendor have focused on the kind of hidden world of immigrants. You were born here, but your parents are from Iran, right?
That's correct.
So what is it about those stories that speak to you?
I guess I've always been attracted to the outsider, and an immigrant is usually an outsider because I've always wondered how could somebody live in this world and how do you make sense of it, and an outsider always worked. Plus, for New York, we've seen kind of the same story again and again and again. They've been filming in New York for over 100 years since Edison put the camera down. And I find it a challenge to film things that we haven't seen before in New York. And I think so far both the films have offered something fresh from the city that would make us look at our city in a new way.
So, listeners, have you lived like this? Do you know anyone who has lived like this? Want to call in and tell us your stories that kind of sound like Alejandro's stories? And what you think they mean, 212-433-WNYC, 9692 for director Ramin Barani, whose new film Chop Shop is at Film Forum, or maybe you've seen Film Forum. Film Forum, of course, you've seen Film Forum. Maybe you've seen Chop Shop at Film Forum and want to talk about its effect on you. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And here's another clip from the movie. Here, Alejandro is showing Izzy his plan for their future, a food van that he's saving for.
The axle is busted, but I'm getting Carlos' uncle to fix it. Everything else is good. So how's the van? It's pretty good, right?
$4,500. We don't got that type of money.
I already lowered it from 6,000. Come see the inside.
Nah, told her I'll be back in an hour.
How are you going to leave without seeing the inside? Come on. Look, there's going to be a cabinet right here. All the silverware right here. Throw some metal over that. It's going to be sparkling. It's great, right?
This van is beat up.
Not at all. All we need is a new alternator. Then, everything else, simple bodywork.
And listeners, how about this? What other little scene corner of the city should be the setting for a film? Ramin was saying how he went out to look for some of the places that haven't already been turned into movie settings. How about some other corner of New York City that might be something for someone's future film, maybe one of his? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Those kids are good.
I mean, the kids are really good. Ollie and Izzy actually knew each other. They go to the same school in the Lower East Side in Manhattan. And Isamar had stood up for Alejandro's real sister, who's older than him but kind of tiny. And so he kind of loved her already in a brotherly way. And so that really helped their relationship. I think when you see the film, you really think that they really feel like brother and sister.
And it reminds me a little bit of The Wire on HBO, where they took non-actors and turned them into actors. It's not quite that, but it had a very authentic feel for being so down to the street.
Yeah, actually, the only actor in this film is, I think, Ahmed, because he was a non-actor before Man Pushed Cart, then he became an actor. And really, once you go through the process, you've become an actor. They're just non-professionally trained. Once they've done it, they're actors.
And thinking about that clip where the food van is the key to their future, at least at that moment. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to compare this film to an Alger Hiss novel, so I guess we can assume it's not that simple.
No, it's not that simple, yeah.
Let's take a call. Bill in Woodside, you're on WNYC, not that far away. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. I think this film is going to open the eyes of a lot of Americans. There's been a lot of problems like this in the Bronx also. And maybe we could start rethinking our policies in this country about why we're allowing all these illegal aliens to come into this country and live under these conditions and cause such a burden on our society.
The agenda surfaces, but it's a burden on them, too. Is Alejandro an illegal immigrant, he and his sister, in this script?
It's never explained in the film. My impression is that they've probably been here since a very early age, 2 or 3 years old, and they've kind of slipped through the cracks. Their parents were, of course, immigrants, and you see that a lot in that location, and they kind of get stuck in a cycle, and you don't know how to get out of it.
Does the question occur to you as you explore the lives of people like these? Maybe there are too many people here. Maybe if there weren't so many people here, it would be easier to absorb those who are allowed to come into the economy and they wouldn't have to live like this?
No, I don't see that as my job as the filmmaker. Mine is to accept what's in front of me and to try to make sense out of it. I think we have to accept that's the way the world is at the moment. And I'm just looking at these people to see what are their lives like and how is it that they're living with such resilience and with such compassion towards one another under such difficult situations, and how can that be an inspiration to my own life? Because then I think maybe it would be to someone else's as well.
John in Georgia, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right.
First of all, I'd like to say that we feel that Mr. Barani is probably one of the real up-and-coming directors that we need to pay attention to in the future. I personally feel that his views in his filmmaking don't necessarily form opinions, but show you actual life as it is occurring, and somehow he condenses that into a film of a specific length. Regardless of whether they're illegal immigrants or not, it shows reality. It shows real people. And it's just, you know, an eye that we haven't seen a lot in films. And his films, in my opinion, cause the viewer to actually contemplate life.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can put that on your blurb sheet. Stan on the Upper West Side. You're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Stan.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
Just one intellectual point is that I recently saw a piece about a great documentary photographer named Shelby Lee Adams. And there was an awful lot of controversy about this because he was somewhat editorializing what he was looking at. He was setting up pictures and all that. So there's always a question in the back of your mind that, and I haven't seen this film, but the filmmaker not being a pure documentarian, then you have to question what you're looking at. Is he, you know, turning a story that doesn't exist into something that we think exists? So there's that, just that one aspect, which I always want to question. I think people should question.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing mock documentaries, it becomes a mock documentary. Then it can't be taken seriously.
Right, because you're not observing like a stenographer. You're observing and then trying to tell us a story that conveys what's important about what you're observing.
I see no difference between fiction and documentary. I'm only interested in storytelling. And, you know, a great example of this is Robert Flaherty, who is a documentarian filmmaker. However, if you watch the documentary about the making of his amazing film, Man of Erin, which is one of my favorite films, the people who live there are still to this date having heated arguments and discussions about whether or not Man of Erin is a documentary or if he's fictionalized it. And I personally find it really irrelevant question because the film is what's important and the spirit of that film and what it shows us about humanity and what it shows us about a vision of the world is what's affected me as an individual and enlightened me about how the world functions and how I could live in it. And that's how I see my own films. On a more concrete level, taking it away from an abstract conversation, I was shooting in the Iron Triangle, usually doing 30 takes. That's what you're seeing in the film. It's not one take. It's 30 takes. And the people who worked there still thought I was making a documentary. So even in our minds, fiction and documentary is blurry. And making this film has eliminated that question from my mind, and I can move on to something else.
I read in the press notes that you and your co-screenwriter used this quotation from the Sufi poet Rumi as a guide. Quote, "Love in a sea of sorrow is not sorrowful. Love in a sea of sorrow is not sorrowful." And the film does have an open heart in the midst of some sadness. Like in this clip from the film where Izzy and Ali are discussing how they will decorate the van.
If we do get it, it's going to go Izzy's van and it's going to be red.
How are you putting your name and picking the color?
Because I'm older than you, I'm cooking, and I'm driving that van.
All right, I'm sanding, I'm priming, I'm painting, and doing the letters.
But my name is going on that van.
All right. It's going like this. My name is going diagonally. Your initials could maybe go like right here.
Initials?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Easy.
Yeah.
Want to talk about that clip?
I mean, it's a great, great scene. I mean, I think these kids are great. My co-writer and I, Azimi, we wrote the scene, and then I would rehearse it with the kids. I never showed the kids the script. I would just tell them what the scene was about, and I would tell them the dialogue quickly so they would only remember just bits and pieces. And then they would rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, and they'd come up with these great things on their own, and then I would transcribe them, and they would be forced to kind of memorize their own improvisations. And
so in some ways like that, this film seems more hopeful than your man push cart. The children do manage to play, even if it's just pushing shopping carts over an overpass into an empty lot.
Yeah, I think it was a deliberate choice to bring in more of a joy and a humor within the midst of a harshness. And that was one of the things I liked about the real location, which is people were getting into fistfights to get a car into their garage, and then 10 minutes later a soccer game would erupt on the street, and then they'd have a cookout at night.
So we're almost out of time. I can't go through these calls, but they're suggesting Vinegar Hill by Dumbo, Wood Frame Houses and Original Tenants, good shooting location, East New York, like Highland Park, where there are a lot of immigrants from Africa and Bangladesh now, by Vinegar Hill or across from Jamal Mansion in Harlem, says someone else. Are you constantly looking now for those places like Iron Triangle where you can tell some untold cities of stories from New York?
I'm a New Yorker now, but I was born and raised in North Carolina, and my new film is about a Senegalese taxi driver in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Oh, wow, that's great. Is that out also?
No, I'm finishing it now, so I hope you'll see that one too.
All right. But this film is Chop Shop by Ramin Barani, who has been my guest. It is at Film Forum in Lower Manhattan through Tuesday. A pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.